Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jared Newgard on the show for the first time. Jared's a longtime friend of the JMO crew, and it's very fun to have him on. We get to know him a little bit and find out where he started his fishing career as a guide. His footprint as a fishing guide is a little bit unique. He spends a lot of time both in North Dakota and Minnesota. In this conversation, we're going to focus on the Minnesota topics with the Minnesota Walleye Opener right around the corner, and we're going to focus on how to find and catch fish. Jared's got great recommendations and stories for this, and there's a lot to take away. So the Minnesota opener is right around the corner. Let's talk about it with Jared Newgard. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty, roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. The Chalet on Mille Lacs has all your lodging needs and more for your next vacation on Mille Lacs Lake near Garrison, Minnesota. And when I say this lodging opportunity has all your needs and more, I'm talking about two private shorelines, including a protected channel to safely park your boat overnight, a great outdoor feature you're not going to find everywhere on the lake, a game room, high-speed Wi-Fi, you're minutes away from the casino and golf course. The indoor and outdoor amenities of the Chalet on Mille Lacs epitomize comfort and convenience with a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom that includes 2 masters, a large kitchen, all the indoor amenities that are perfect for large groups or multi-families. This cabin comfortably sleeps 8. You can add more if you like. Read the reviews from past guests on the website or book directly at Chalet on Mille Lacs. That's www.chaletonmillelacs.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Jared, where are you from? Like, where did you grow up? Where did fishing start for you in your life? Let's kind of start with a little bit of that origin story, and we'll get up to speed to where you're at today, man. Go ahead.
My backstory is I was born and raised in Moorhead, Minnesota. Grew up, graduated from Moorhead High, and had the opportunity and privilege to grow up in Otter Tail County in the summertime. If I wasn't on the baseball field or playing hockey with buddies, we were down at the lake chasing fish. Didn't really much matter what they were. I'm assuming kind of like you, right? Or like most people, you kind of go through the evolution of angling. You start out catching fish off the dock, going with your grandpa and the like, right? Mine was very similar. We had a family cabin in Otter Tail County. My grandparents bought it years ago. If you remember when lake cabins were expensive, They bought it back then when they were expensive, and we all wish we'd have bought 20 of them.
Yeah.
But had the fortunate opportunity to spend a ton of time down there in the summer. It's a seasonal place. We didn't get down there much in the winter. But seasonal place, fish with my grandparents every weekend, fish with my dad and my uncles, et cetera, growing up. I'd say we had a fish camp. It just happened to have a lake. Happen to have a cabin on a lake. That makes sense. I mean, there were boats coming in and out all day long, uncles coming in, cousins coming in and out. And then, of course, we all had to run it into the dock to greet them and see what they caught, right? If they catch any bass or walleyes or whatever it might be. So that was kind of, say, the younger days, if you will. And then graduated through high school, go to college, get into the professional world, business world, if you will. And then kind of somewhere in that 20, when I was about 25 years old or so, I met Jason Mitchell through some mutual friends, mutual acquaintances, John Hoyer being one of them. He was kind of one that connected me to called the Mitchell Outdoor Media space. Got to know Jason through that connection. And then over time, just kind of became a fishing guide, I guess, kind of through, what do you say, through osmosis, just because being around the crew and being around the group and spending time in Devil's Lake and people that are in that industry, I kind of woke up one day and I was semi-involved in the industry, kind of on a part-time basis, from a promotional perspective, but also on a guiding perspective. And yeah, that's kind of, I guess, call it the backstory of where I came from or how I got to where I am. I work for a technology company in Fargo, Network Center Inc. I've got boy girl twins. They're 7.5 years old, and Riker and Emery, hello, I'm sure you're listening. yeah, man, it's been a pleasure to grow up in Ottertail County or spend time there. And I've fished all over the place. You know, I fished Skokie, I fished Missouri River and fished Devil's Lake, and kind of really, I don't want to say chase bites, but just kind of chase the best bite.
How would you describe wherever it happened for you, where you kind of just went from, you know, just like a passionate young angler to fishing on a higher level, or like taking those real steps in fishing personally with your skills and your skill level and your confidence that actually started bringing you to where you're at today?
Sure. I would say that timeline for me, it was probably, you know, they had the advent of the internet or the internet explosion, if that makes sense. That's probably 8th grade, right? Various websites, if you remember, like fishingbuddy.com and some other local or regional website forum pages, etc., that were out there. I mean, it was kind of like a, you know, for a 12-year-old who really loved to fish, it was kind of like kid in the candy store situation, because now I had, you know, as a 12-year-old, you're kind of limited as far as where your parents will take you and how far your bike will take you, right? But now you've got the internet at your fingertips. You can go to this website. There's fishing reports. There's, you know, say a river, living in Moorhead, I live by the North Dam in Moorhead. So you could see river levels, water quality, water clarity, all those different data sets, data points, if you will. And then also on top of that, you had the opportunity to, if you chose to or wanted to, and I did this because I was a 12-year-old that was just dying for information. But the professional anglers, like I vividly remember Tommy Kimos, who did a tournament out in the Missouri River and won it, I believe, jig fishing. And I watched it on TV, and I was just enthralled with that. And I mean, I sent him an email as like a 12-year-old, but hey, you know what? You're coming to, he was going, I forget where he was going next or the next season, but I sent him an email. It's like, hey, I can get to Ottertail Lake or wherever the heck they were. And I just wanted to learn, you know? Now, the advent of the internet, and then so that gave me the access to people that were kind of outside of my immediate circle, if that makes sense. So now I can contact Tom Kimo, I can contact whomever. Whether they respond, that's a different story. But what that gave me the opportunity and the ability to do was, you know, you kind of only, you hear the theory about, you know, you are the sum of the people around you. So, and I say that with 100% respect, if my uncle and grandparents, et cetera, are great fishermen. But if you only fish with your uncle and your grandparents and your dad, you're only going to be as successful as they were, right? So as life and kind of time went on, the hunger never died. The opportunity to fish like the Red River, like I said, it was four blocks from my parents' house. So I could go down there and tinker and mess around and do those things. But now because of the opportunity and connections that I've made, you know, through junior high, high school, or into college, now I've been able to fish with people that are much better anglers, more polished, more refined, have a better general understanding of what's actually going on. And through that, you know, that evolution through that took it from catching a walleye as being an anomaly, or, you know, having to high five about it and talk about it over the weekend, right?
Yeah.
To almost becoming the rule, right? The exception was going out and not catching. But yeah, so that, I guess that's maybe the evolution of kind of how I really got sucked in and hooked. And, you know, I guess probably what's kept me there is, again, just continuing and to be hungry, but also just the connections and the relationships that you make in the industry. I mean, boat show season is one of my favorite times of year, just because I get to go to the show and I get to see all my, you know, see my friends that I haven't seen for 8 months or better. And, you know, those connections just continue, and you know, in our earlier conversations, we mentioned a mutual friend of ours who just drops you a smart line once in a while, and you kind of giggle and laugh, and it's like, you know, I thrive on that kind of stuff.
So I want to talk about a little bit about your guide service, because I mean, you know, you have a family, and you have a full-time job, but you also guide quite a bit. Tell me a little bit about like how that started in your life, like it just, or how that is today. Like, what are your guide offerings? You know, in a schedule like that, I'm sure you're a busy guy all the time, but you know, how much time can you put into fishing, you know, in the season? Like, what does that look like to you? And I know you're a multi-species guy throughout the year, and you also fish different bodies of water. You already mentioned, I mean, you're very comfortable with that. You know, I want you to kind of paint that whole picture.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, years ago when I started working with Jason and Woodland Resort, I was kind of called on an employee basis, if that makes sense. So they would coordinate everything for me, and then I was, you know, you're expected to show up and work, right? And it was all on a weekend basis type stuff, unless I had it coordinated previous with vacation schedules and everything else. But as life happens and things change, and you know, families come along, it just wasn't a feasible model for me anymore to kind of, I guess, to do that live in Devil's Lake part time in Fargo, but. So with that, you kind of look, you know, not wanting to get out of the industry, you wanted to stay involved, enjoying the guiding and really enjoying just fellowship among guides, et cetera. And the customers too. I mean, the clients are, they're fantastic, right? A lot of, you know, as much connection as we have with our fellow fishermen, we have, you know, as much with most of our clients too, especially, you know, the repeat ones. So looking for a way to, how do I structure and keep, how do you keep everybody happy, right?
Yeah.
which is the $1 million question. So kind of, I guess with that, what I was able to do in kind of stepping away from having the responsibilities to an employer, I went off on my own, and in doing that, that provided me the opportunity and flexibility to schedule my own days or on my calendar, which made life tremendously better. And then also, because of the network with my fellow guides in Skokie, Devil's Lake, anywhere, Missouri River, Western Minnesota, that gives me the opportunity to, hey, if I can't take the trip, I've got buddies that can. So that provided the opportunity for customers to kind of be, I don't want to say be a one-stop shop, but they could just call me and say, hey, we want to go these days. Can you go? And if the answer is I can't, I've got people that can backfill that. So it works so well that way. You know, unfortunately, there's still responsibilities to family, right? And there's something's got to give somewhere here and there. But it's been 7 years now in this model, and it's been pretty good. It's worked out really well. Get to fish with my kids now more than ever, and get to stay in an industry that I really love and enjoy, and get to hang out with the people, clients, and the customers and fellow guys all at the same time. So it's been a unique ride, Taylor, but it's been good so far.
In the spirit of, you know, the timing right now, we're only a couple of weeks ahead of the Minnesota opener. I know a lot of people, especially, you know, a lot of Minnesotans are thinking about this stuff, and it's right on the horizon. This is topic of conversation. And so I kind of want to stick to that. You grew up in and around Otter Tail County. You still get to spend some time down there. I kind of want to stay a little bit on the Minnesota side and talk about the Minnesota opener and see where that takes us. That being said, do you fish the Minnesota opener? Do you have like a tradition for that, or what does that look like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. We definitely fish every year for Minnesota opener. You know, it's kind of a coin flip if we're in Minnesota or not. and the only thing that kind of, I guess, dictates that truly is weather, right? I mean, I find it really difficult to pull myself away from Devil's Lake when I've got a shallow casting bite up there going in the spring. But no, that is an amazing time. But we do fish the Minnesota opener. It's been a tradition since, gosh, I'm getting old, Taylor, call it the last 15 plus 20 years, somewhere in there. Spent a lot of time with buddies. Like I said, we have that cabin in Otter Tail County, and I've actually got a good friend of mine that puts on a tournament every year. that he hosts every year, and it's the Saturday of opener. It starts at midnight Friday night and goes until 4 o'clock on Saturday. And it's a lot of fun. It's kind of like we talked earlier about camaraderie. You get to see your buddies and groups of people you don't get to see maybe once or twice a year. And it's a hoot, and I am absolutely excited for it. You're absolutely right. It's a holiday, man. It's just like deer hunting, deer opener.
It's funny that you say that, because like I'm born and raised a Minnesota boy. I'm North Dakota now. I like to fish like anywhere and everywhere, but there's just something about the Minnesota opener. And I think, you know, people from Wisconsin, same deal. There's a inland walleye opener there too. So if that's your first time out, like the tradition of it is special, man. It's like every year I'm going to do these episodes where we just have these conversations and include just how awesome the anticipation is of the opener. But I'm with you. I must say I've probably cheated a couple of times and not actually fish in Minnesota, but it hardly matters if it's, you know, that second weekend in May or, you know, whenever Minnesota opens up, like that is such a traditional weekend that you just got to be fishing somewhere. And so, yeah, dude, I can totally appreciate that. But looking at, you know, fishing this year, even, you know, I mean, I'm hoping you can reflect back on all your experience, but like when you think about the Minnesota opener, you know, there's such a spectrum, even just looking at the last 10 years, because that's a relatively short amount of time, but even the last 5 years, the opener, the weather and the conditions, the lake conditions, you know, the water conditions, like just the fishing conditions overall have been really different. They're like there's definitely been you know, a spectrum to what anglers are experiencing on the opener. Sure. And so I kind of want to talk a little bit about that, like, you know, talk about things that you pay attention to: water temperature, weed growth, water clarity, you know, using side scan to find fish, maybe a little bit of forward sonar, the techniques. Where does this conversation start for you in that regard?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Great questions. Great perspective on that. So to kind of circle back. Yeah. So we're going to Otter Tail County. Let's just pick Otter Tail Lake, right? It's big enough and vast enough and generic enough. We can just pick on that one.
Sure.
And there will be a thousand boats out there for Minnesota opener this year, I would guess. So what's a couple more, right?
Yeah.
but no, so to kind of touch on that, I mean, you mentioned side scan. Absolutely, 100%. I mean, your electronics are your eyes, right? This is a time of year that you could likely get away, you know, the best time of year to get away with not having a side scan, because the fish are typically in skinny water. But there's no replacement for that technology. You might be able to see them once or twice throughout the day, but if you're seeing them, they're probably already gone. But no, to touch base on that. So my number one spots, number one area lakes, if you will, are going to be waters that are the areas I'm going to focus on is water between 6 and 20 feet typically for opener. And that's during daylight hours. After dark, I'll go probably 2 to 10 feet. That'll kind of say everything just kind of gets cut in half, right? 3 to 10 feet, somewhere in there. You know, a headlamp can be your best friend after dark. If you're looking for fish in shallow water, you can just see their eyes up there. So that's kind of a quick shortcut. A lot of people don't pay attention to. But no, what we're looking for is a sand and rock flat in anywhere from, I like 6 to 10 feet, 6 to 12 feet this time of year. This particular spring, you're aware we didn't have hardly any moisture this winter, very limited runoff. Water levels on lakes, sounds like, is kind of like at August levels in that Otter Tail County area. There's not a lot of, you know, there's really no new water coming in unless we get a big rain, because there was no snow. So kind of the secondary current areas where you have a creek coming in, maybe, that's probably not going to happen this spring. So you can kind of eliminate those. The primary areas that you would see current at were, like, say, the Pelican River, the Otter Tail River, those different rivers that are coming into the lakes. There's still going to be current areas there, but, you know, obviously because of the flow, constant flow. But I don't foresee those areas being nearly as good this year, just because I think the spawn is going to be pretty much 100% complete, and these fish are going to be all post-spawn, and they're going to be moving. These fish are going to be closer to their June haunts than they are going to be their opener haunts this spring, is my opinion. The reason for that, I think water temps are going to be, call it, ahead of schedule. Whoever makes that schedule, I don't know who that is, Taylor.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. We always talk about this schedule, but what does that even mean?
What does that even mean is right. And spring is even the toughest one to predict as far as water temps go. But if I can find a flat that is, say, directly adjacent to a river or a current area dumps into on the north side of a lake, that is 100% my number one go-to spot. And I'm probably going to live and die there all day. And the good news is I'm probably not going to have to, because we're going to whack enough fish in a few hours that we're going to probably either go look for bigger ones or just call it a day, because we've caught a ton. But those areas, like I said, that 6 to 12 feet, sand with some rock. And then I don't think I mentioned, but we are looking for emerging weeds and new weeds, fresh green weeds, likely cabbage would be ideal. This time of year, this particularly this spring, because we've had no snow and lots of sunshine, or more than average sunshine, those weeds are going to be further along, and those fish are going to be in there. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to getting out there and ripping some baits around.
The Chalet on Mille Lacs has all your lodging needs and more for your next vacation on Mille Lacs Lake near Garrison, Minnesota. And when I say this lodging opportunity has all your needs and more, I'm talking about two private shorelines, including a protected channel to safely park your boat overnight, a great outdoor feature you're not going to find everywhere on the lake, a game room, high-speed Wi-Fi, you're minutes away from the casino and golf course. The indoor and outdoor amenities of the Chalet on Mille Lacs epitomize comfort and convenience with a 4-bedroom, 3-bathroom that includes 2 masters, a large kitchen, all the indoor amenities that are perfect for large groups or multi-families. This cabin comfortably sleeps 8. You can add more if you like. Read the reviews from past guests on the website or book directly at Chalet on Mille Lacs. That's www.chaletonmillelacs.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers from Flop Industries. The Flopbox 10 and Flopbox 20 are heavy-duty, roto-molded bait coolers, fully insulated, which comes into play both summer and winter. The aeration system for minnows and other live bait is fully enclosed and lithium-powered for reliability and durability. The stainless hardware, the removable chill plate, the list goes on of features, but these high-end bait coolers can easily enhance your fishing experience when you consider their ability to keep your bait alive, fresh, and ready to go when you need it. Check out the Flopbox bait coolers and more at flopindustries.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. Talking about, you know, maybe some of the, I mean, your presentation selection, but I even more so, I mean, you know, I suppose that, you know, a jig and a minnow or a jig and a shiner can be a big part of this conversation, and that all sounds simple, but I even like definitely taking that next step right away. Like, what are some of the things that you feel like help you be successful, both just, you know, talking about the presentation specifically, but also cadence or gear selection, like, or, you know, boat position and or boat control, like how you're utilizing your electronics to really line up on these fish. Like, I like some of those details, man. Let's get into some of that right away.
Yeah. So I guess boat positioning, and it's just going to depend upon a little bit as far as what we're doing from a presentation perspective. Right. So one of my favorite way, or one of the most productive ways, I wouldn't say it's my favorite, but one of the most productive ways to attack these fish on these, I don't want to say expansive flats, because that's a relative term, but these bigger flats that we're looking to cover water on. One of the most effective ways to do it that I've seen, and this is one of those situations where you just kind of learn by getting your butt kicked over the years, right? You look at the boat next to you, and it's like, why are they windmilling them and we're catching 2? What's going on here, right? Mm-hmm. But it's as simple as it gets. 4 to 6 pound mono and a 16th ounce fireball jig with a shiner. Just, you know, a good cast split behind the boat, or maybe a really good cast split behind the boat, and just drag that thing around on the flats. That is, you know, if you don't have any wind going, you can drag, just kind of, you're just trolling that minnow behind the boat, and those walleyes will come up and smash that thing. A lot of time, you know, that's a situation I like to have with, you know, 10 miles an hour of wind or less. If you can really control your boat and your speed and everything, you're pulling that at around a half a mile to a mile an hour. Wildly effective, often overlooked like crazy. Nobody wants to do it because it's kind of a slow process, if you will. It's not ripping a crankbait. It's not ripping a plastic. It's just more of a, just more, I don't call it a traditional method, but it's a traditional method that just really, really works, especially when those fish are off a little bit. And you don't need anything fancy. You get a 16 ounce plain leadhead jig. Year in and year out, by far been my best, most effective bait on that pattern.
You know, line selection, like, I'd like to maybe hear a little bit of your reasoning. Like, what is it about a 4 to 6 pound mono that gives you confidence fishing early spring, you know, shallow walleyes versus what somebody might debate, you know, the merits of, you know, a thin diameter braid with a fluorocarbon leader where they can maybe cast it a little farther, or it, sure, you know, cuts the water or the action of the jig. I'd like to hear your version of this story.
Sure. No, this kind of goes back to what I mentioned earlier about getting my butt kicked. Right. And, we've all been there, unfortunately, been in that boat where you're the group that's watching. But, I mean, ultimately what led me down that path is just failure. Right. I'm sitting there looking at it going, and not to sound, you know, arrogant, but it's like, I know that I'm a better angler than that guy. Cause you know, Minnesota Lakes, you've been out there, you know, a lot of the people out there, right?
Yeah.
And day in and day out, you're kicking their butt. But that particular day, for whatever reason is going on, they're dominating you. And I really saw this really come into play originally, in the spring. It was, you know, call it a current bite or a river bite, or a river feeds into a very well-known lake in that part of the world. And I sat there and I watched my good friend pound on him with 6 pound mono. And I was sitting there with, I think, 6 or 8 pound fire line. And of course he was giving me a hard time about it before I even started that night. Cause he's like, you're not going to catch anything on fire line. And then I caught like a 26 incher with I think it was my second cast. So then I got a chance to talk smart. And that was really the last time I got to talk that night. Because they proceeded to pound on them. But the whole thing with the mono is twofold. I think the jig floats differently on monofilament than it does on braid. And I think it also, like, when you pop your jig, it pops differently, if that makes sense, because of the stretch, just because of the line diameter too, how wide it is in the water, it's more floaty. And then I've spent some time fishing the tail race and up in North Dakota, and that's a great place to get a lesson on why 4 and 6 pound mono is superior to braid in a lot of situations, particularly around jigging and live bait.
Do you, I mean, learning those kind of lessons when you're pitching for walleye shallow, mm-hmm. Consider a lot of things to be apples to apples here when you're pitching on walleye shallow throughout the year. I mean, I know that's not always the pattern, but there is almost always a shallow walleye pattern somewhere. We talk enough about fishing. The walleye world is discovering that a lot of walleyes are comfortable living shallower than we think, mm-hmm. you know, throughout the year. Is this sort of decision making transferable? Do you feel like you're always throwing a 4 to 6 pound mono in a shallow casting scenario for a walleyes, or is there a time, maybe a water temperature, maybe a, you know, maybe this certain kind of bite that changes throughout the year where you will go back to a braid and a leader kind of a thing, like, or tell me about that.
Sure. No, great question. So my goal as an angler is to see what water temp and what, how fast in the calendar year, if you want to call it that, how fast can I catch them on plastic and catch them effectively? And my goal around that is I can fish it on braid. And like you said, I do tie in a 12 pound fluorocarbon leader to that braid, just an Alberto knot. So it's an inline knot. I'll throw on like a probably a 20-foot fluorocarbon lead into that combination, which does kind of two things. One, it makes your line invisible, but it also gives you a little bit of stretch. And I like that 20-pound lead just because when I get bit off by a pike, not if, but when, I can just tie another jig on real quick and go. But I think in the spring, water temps are a little bit colder. Fish may or may not be more lethargic. That's a debatable thing, right? But it seems like in the spring in that shallow water that mono is king. And as soon as I can get to just say 6 feet of water, 10 feet of water, and I can throw a plastic, I will be throwing a plastic until it ices up. And the reason for that is I can just fish it so much more effectively, so much quicker. And I'm catching the fish that want to bite versus trying to catch the fish that are neutral and negative with the live bait presentation.
Yeah. I don't want to just breeze over your recommendation there with the long lead. I think that is something that I adopted. I think the first time that, you know, somebody really meaningful, that I heard it, you know, at the right time where I digested it, I think it was Brad Hawthorne over on Mille Lacs, you know, mm-hmm. talking about long leads, and we were just talking about clear water there. Right. And ice fishing, it might've been, but I really fell in love with longer leads. And once I tried it once I started to pay attention to that, cause in my mind I was feeling like I was getting more stealth out of it and all that. And people say, well, there's no stretch in fluorocarbon, but when you have a long enough leader, there is a quantifiable stretch in most of these brands.
Absolutely.
When it's long enough. But if your lead is never more than 2 feet long, then yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, you're not going to experience like that.
Yeah. But, it's not a rubber band, right?
Right. But when it is long enough, like you will, you know, yeah, like it definitely is a different thing. That's why I don't want to really breeze over it. I like that recommendation there where the longer fluorocarbon leader, again, like I got into it from the translucent line, the stealth fishing clear zebra mussel water aspect of it. But the real like day-to-day like benefit, I feel like, is like what you said, when you're fishing on, especially on Minnesota water or Devil's Lake, like whatever you're throwing, a 3 pound pike is going to take, you know, a bunch of them home that day. Like you can't, a lot of this water, like you can't keep the hammer handles off, and that's terrible. And you're like, even if they don't bite you off, if you catch a pike and it chokes your jig, you better be checking your line. Right. And is those longer leads made me so much more efficient with just retying so quick and never having to retie the leader. So if by the end of the day, worst case scenario, if I have a 10 to 12 foot leader, like your case, you know, 15, 20 foot leader, worst case scenario, like, you know, you're going to eat away, you know, 18 inches of that line or, you know, 24 inches of that line. And you're not losing anything on that leader. And then you can be liberal with it. You don't ever have to feel like you have to limp another few fish off of line that's got some scuffs on it because you've only got 20 inches of leader left. I think that in itself, it seems so basic, but I really like to highlight that, especially this time of year. None of us have been in the boat for a while. A lot of us are playing tackle in the boat in the garage right now. We're re-rigging rods and you're tying on leaders for opening day. Remember that. Or if that's not been some, you know, part of your, you know, if that's not been part of your deal, you know, if you are a floor, you know, or if you are a, you know, a super line fluorocarbon leader person, I think that's a good takeaway. So I kind of wanted to sit on that for a little while, but and what would you say, you know, I mean, you fished enough, you know, you're the type of angler that, especially if you're fishing for yourself, if you get them, if you go and you get a bunch, you know, say you got a limit or you got whatever eaters you're looking to keep that day and you've kind of already wore out a couple of spots and the bite is going good. What are some decisions you make on a good bite where you want to go find some bigger fish? What have been some stories or some things that you feel like you've learned over the years that might help take that sort of, you know, experience to the next level of like upping your batting average on size and not just sitting on a community spot to catch hopefully enough eaters for the day. If you've done that, or if you're looking to get to that next, you know, take that next step where you want to target a little bit bigger fish, when you're fishing early in the year, what are some stories? What are some, just some meaningful learnings that you feel like you've had in your career? Or maybe just some theories, some, you know, things that you've had some thought processes on a good opening weekend, or just a good outing on early in the year when you wanted to target nicer fish instead of just community fish?
Sure. Well, that's a great question. I think the number, my number one takeaway on that is, you know, it just kind of comes from experience and failure, right? However you want to look at it, you can call it, I think failure, or excuse me, experience is just a nice way to say failure in all reality. But, I guess, you know, it's like you said, it's to say it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh, part two to that, you know, where we're going to fish in Minnesota for opener. I'm probably in the minority, but I haven't really ever seen a phenomenal morning bite in Minnesota opener, and Devil's Lake is the same way. I would just as soon say sleep in till 7, get up, drink coffee, have breakfast, and hit the water at 9. And it's 100% because we talked earlier about water temp. As the day goes on and that water continues to warm and kind of, like I call it, set up throughout the day, it just gets, the bite just continually gets better throughout the day until, you know, roughly before dark. So that's another, say, tip or pointer. A lot of guys are just, they're just chomping at the bit. They want to be on the water before the sun's even up, and that's, you know, to each their own. But, from a productivity perspective, I've caught way more fish in the afternoon in the spring than I have any, really any other day, time of day. Part of that's because I'm not up in the morning right away to go chase after them, but it's one of those things through experience and seeing that at 10 o'clock, they're typically biting way better than they were at sunrise.
Fishing the Minnesota opener on a lot of inland lakes, Wisconsin people can relate to this too. You know, there's something special about just going out on any of these lakes that's kind of like, you know, maybe your home lake and you've got these memories on it. They're, you know, they've got fish in them, but they might not be a capital walleye factory. And so maybe getting, you know, a dozen bites in a day can sometimes, you know, that can sometimes just be a very memorable and a super phenomenal day. But even those anglers are still, you know, comparing this year to last year, how many, you know, how many 18 inches did we get instead of 14 inches? So it's all relative, like that size conversation, but it's relative, but it's universal in that that's how we all think. Like everybody's thinking like, did I catch more big fish than somebody else in the boat? Maybe against my former self last year? Like, am I leveling up by trying new things, testing new theories, looking in new spots, you know, using a little different, you know, strategy to my lure selection cadence? Maybe you invest in some new gear and you're just excited to put that all out there. But so much of us formulate our buying decisions and just content consumption, like everything we're doing, to help us get a little bit more edge on the fish, especially the bigger fish, right? Like, I think I'm trying to explain that. I think everybody knows that, like everybody feels that way. And you can articulate it however for yourself. Again, it's all relative, but size matters to all of us deep down. Absolutely. And if we do the exact same thing year in and year out on the same body of water, this as the year goes on, we have the same ideas. Like you said it earlier, if all we ever do is fish with our grandpa and our uncle and our dad in the same boat, and we do all the same things, same lures, you're going to have the same result. Or Mother Nature is going to dictate your results. But anglers, not this day and age, I feel like that, you know, any conversation or theory, some of it can just be a couple of bites. Sometimes this part of the conversation is the most impactful, not for somebody to go out and learn how to just catch nothing but 10 pounders. It's like, it's still meaningful if we're out trying new things. We crash and burn 4 out of 5 times, but that fifth spot that we check, or that fifth theory that we have on where we might find some fish, or whatever your answer is, like, well, I'm just curious what that is for you and your experience.
I'll kind of expound upon your question with kind of two things that I've discovered or understood, and I guess kind of, and it'll kind of carry, the one will kind of carry over into the rest of the season, and the one is just kind of more specific, I guess, to the spring. But the first thing is, I always try to look ahead. And what I mean by that is, I don't want to, if I think that, just say, June Father's Day weekend, roughly June 15th, all of the, and this is just generalizing, right? But all of the fish are now off of their spring, say the first primary break pattern, first weed edge pattern, and now they're all out on the, they're all sitting out on these mid-lake humps, right? Or maybe they're 16 to 18 feet of water on some humps that are, you know, adjacent to those, that spawning area and that flat that we talked about. Mm-hmm. I want to be out there. If I think that's June 15th, I'm going to be checking that June 1st. And there, and the and my theory on that is, I don't think the females when they spawn, I don't, you know, there's lots of, people have a lot of theories on this, but my theory is when a female wants to spawn and drop eggs, she's going to slide up on that flat or go up in that creek arm or whatever it might be. She's going to take care of business and get out of there. There's no value to her. There's no maternal instinct that she's going to sit there and, you know, oversee these eggs and ensure that they're, that they hatch and that all 200,000 are survive, right? That's not her, that's not her deal. Drop eggs, slide out that creek channel, creek arm, or the flat, go to the first break and hang out for, call it 3 days. I don't even honestly know if there's a recovery period, Taylor. Everyone talks about that, but walleye's never told me they had to recover after dropping
eggs. I agree 100%.
I think it's truly like a turnaround thing. It's drop the eggs, that fish leaves, and it's just, like I said, hanging out in that, call it 8 to 12 foot water for a little while. And that's just my theory on it. But when I see them, when I find them, excuse me, on those offshore points or offshore spots, I'm one of the first guys fishing. So I'm getting to fish these fish before anybody else in their head theoretically thinks that they're there. And a lot of times the ones that are there first are the females, which are the bigger ones typically.
Yeah.
And the reason for that is, you know, like I said, they got in, they got out. Well, the males are still sitting up there waiting for bar close, waiting for the last one to come through. And then they'll eventually filter out to that, you know, like I said, the June 15th spot, to the 4th of July spot, to the August, you know, open water spot, whatever that might be. That's my theory on that. So when I'm trying to catch bigger fish in general, I'm going to go up shallow. I'm going to go where I know they were. I'm going to catch a few fish, and maybe I'll get lucky. Maybe it'll be a straggler 25 incher that's hanging out up there, and I'll smile if I do catch her. But the reality is that's all. The only thing that's going to do is probably screw up my plan for the next step, because now I'm going to think there's more fish up here, right, of that size. But I'm going to go up. I'm going to catch my fish where I knew they were, and then I'm going to push out and try to see where they are now and have kind of a, call it, 2 week head start on the next guy. Because a lot of guys that were people, they're just not forward thinking that far. They're thinking, oh, they still have to be shallow because they've been here the last 10 years. And they're not wrong. There's fish shallow, but they're likely not the big ones that they're hoping for. They're probably not a picture fish, right? Now, flip side is, if I want to catch a big fish and it's springtime and I want to catch it in 10 feet of water or less, it's on a crankbait and it's after dark. And I'm trolling. I'm trolling. There's some guys that will, you know, that do shore fish and cast and fish out of waders, but I'm going to fish again, call it that north. This is called for the first 2 weeks of the season, but it'll be that north end of a lake, 10 feet of water or less, likely less. Weeds, sand, some rock, just a kind of a mixed bag of habitat. And I'm going to troll crankbaits, minnow style crankbaits. There's generally what worked best for me. They dive, you know, 4 to 6 feet or 2 to 6 feet, depending upon what brand they are. But those longer, skinnier, more of a rolly style crankbait versus like a, you know, a shad wrap, it's more of a tight wobble, after dark, that is a dynamite way to do it. And you'll catch a lot of fish too. You won't just catch big ones doing that, but we've caught some of our biggest ones doing that in the spring.
I think that's phenomenal. I think that's great. I think you touch on some really important things there. And like for me, I'm always overthinking this stuff. And I think fishing and the fishing industry and, you know, decades past of like content and, you know, just, you know, companies and marketing and stuff like that is such a, like I was talking to Gord Pizer about this recently, that it's such an interesting, like, you know, it's like a research project in itself, you know, of human psychology, fishing is, and the industry and how things are marketed. Cause I feel like you know, and this is just my opinion, but you look at, like, you know, the commercials on fishing television from the last like 15 to 25 years, like especially in the walleye world where people just want to catch any amount of walleyes, like, you know, like how many fish you can catch is really like the basis or sort of the backbone of the decision making and the buying decisions of, like, and the innovation. Like, lures were built, presentations were, you know, sort of, you know, perfected and marketed to anglers to figure out how to catch the most fish. And so we're all just like indoctrinated to gravitate towards catching the most fish that we can. And in some days that is truly like what you're hoping for, especially if you're on a new body of water and you just want to have any success possible, or you're fishing with, you know, you're taking somebody fishing, you know, you guide. So that's a big part of your guide trips, probably a lot, right? Where you just got to bend the rod. So there's lots of value in that. But I feel like anytime you enter a conversation about what do you do to catch nicer fish on a lake where that's not super simple, you know, that's also part of, you know, what I asked you is, like, it's not like we're talking about places where 10 pounders are jumping in the boat. It definitely takes a little bit of thinking. It's definitely those self thinkers. It's definitely the fish finders, people that are able to have their own thoughts and theories and then be willing to fail trying them, that are going to go out and actually find the success and be at the tip of the spear. And I think when you bring up, you know, fish a season ahead of what you think it's supposed to be, that's so huge. That really hits that on the head, that we're all sort of indoctrinated to fish where the most fish are. And we're definitely figuring out that that's almost no time of year is that where you catch the biggest fish or just bigger fish. And then, and same thing with, night trolling with minnow baits. It's like, man, it's like if you think about prior to forward sonar, especially, but even like, you know, 15 years ago, if we had a podcast 15 years ago and talked about anything other than a jig and a shiner minnow on the opener, you know, like you would be you just wouldn't be popular. Like you just wouldn't be, you know what I mean? It's an expensive bait. It doesn't catch you more fish. That presentation doesn't catch you more fish. You don't get more bites. So why would I do it? But this conversation around getting better bites is so much more popular nowadays. And a lot of times it goes a little bit away from commercialized fishing, like, you know, and so I can really, really appreciate that. And even still to this day, you're ahead of the times, right? It's like, you know, any of these popular, like, high pressure lakes that you're going to see a million boats on the opener, man, boats just seem to attract boats. But there's all, you know, there's just time day in and day out, you know, those grinders, the guys that are just tucked around a corner, you know, in some sort of little spot, and they're looking for their own thing, their own new thing. You know, by the end of the day or by the end of the weekend, those guys that are staying one step ahead of the big crowds, they're going to have the picture fish. It's just the part of the deal. You just got to start thinking that way. But being prepared for it to be, you know, less fish catches and or not always to work is definitely, you got to be willing to do that. So, man, I can appreciate a ton about that piece of conversation. Well, let's coast this out. We're so good on time. We're kind of getting long here for what I, you know, time wise, and we'll definitely do this again, Jared. I, you know, it's kind of a long time coming. You've been a friend of the JMO crew since even before my time. Meeting you was one of my first couple of years working with Jason. We filmed a crappie episode on the ice. I'm glad that we've been able to stay in touch this long to at least get this first one under our belt. But we'll definitely have to do this again. So what are some other things that either pop into your head? Otherwise we can close this thing out, man. You tell me.
Sure. I guess one of my takeaways as far as recommendations regarding pulling those shallow crankbaits after dark is, you know, a number 11, number 13, it's not too big. They'll eat that when you're looking for big fish. Feed them big baits. Don't short them. Taylor, it's been a lot of fun. I'd love to have a conversation with you about kind of an after dark jig pitching. It's a super unique bite that the only downside is that it's after dark, but I think if you filmed it, you would giggle. But there's an after dark bite on an area lake that's near your hometown that we really pounded on them. And it's 100% related to fish. It sounds silly, but it's 100% related to just fishing Mad Main structure after dark. So dock lights, yard lights, street lights, if they're close enough to the water. It's super unique. It's super fun, and you get to fish by yourself. So it's pretty good time.
That's gotta be, I mean, that's, dude, you're just like hitting some things right there. You think about like shiner spawn at night, and you know, just like the forage activity at night when there's light present, whether it's a full moon or like, you know, like big dock lights. Oh my gosh, that sounds like a gas. So let's wrap it up this way. If anybody has inquiries or questions or just wants to follow along on some of your stuff, is there anything, you know, throw out anything there that you're willing to enable, if you got an email or a social media or anything like that?
Sure. I guess the easiest, best way, the quickest way to get a hold of me is on social media, Instagram or Facebook. But at Fishing ND Guide Service or Fishing North Dakota Guide Service, Jared Newgard, however you want to search it. That's a great way to contact. Shoot me a phone call, shoot me a message. I'm always happy to answer questions. Always happy to help, really. Well, that's one thing they always give me a hard time about, you know, somebody asks a question of how we caught fish. I just help. They don't care. They'll figure, you can do anything you want, but they're not going to be, likely not be able to go out there and duplicate exactly what you're doing, but they're having success and having fun. And I find a tremendous amount of value in that. So anybody wants to reach out, by all means, info@fishingnd.com. And then if I could, just say thanks to my sponsors, Mercury Outboards, Tractor Marine Boat Center in Fargo. They've been fantastic. And yeah, if you have any questions, any comments, please reach out, and happy to talk to you anytime you have time.
All right, we'll be in touch, Jared. Yep, thank you, man. Later.